The Science Show on RN, where we've talked twice to Stephen Hawking in his study in Cambridge. Once, way back, he wrote an article about his book A Brief History of Time, answering many of the quibbles, such as how few actually read it. I asked our great actor John Bell to present Hawking's article. Yes, it had to be John Bell. And here he is once more, followed by Stephen Hawking himself.
Shortly after I accepted Bantam's offer, I got pneumonia. I had to have a tracheotomy operation that removed my voice. For a time, I could communicate only by raising my eyebrows when someone pointed to letters on a card. It seemed quite impossible to finish the book. But a software expert in California named Walt Waltosh heard of my plight. He sent me a computer program that allowed me to write and speak by pressing a switch as the computer scanned lists of words on a screen. It was a bit slow, but then I think slowly, so it suited me quite well. With it, I almost completely rewrote my first draft. I was helped in this revision by one of my students, Brian Whitt. I'd been very impressed by Jacob Bronowski's television series, The Ascent of Man. Such a sexist title would not be allowed today. It gave a feeling for the achievement of the human race in developing from primitive savages only 15,000 years ago to our present state. I wanted to convey a similar feeling for our progress towards a complete understanding of the laws that govern the universe. I was sure that almost everyone was interested in how the universe operates, but most people cannot follow mathematical equations. I don't care much for equations myself. This is partly because it is difficult for me to write them down, but mainly because I don't have an intuitive feeling for equations. Instead, I think in pictorial terms. My aim was to describe these mental images in words, with the help of familiar analogies and a few diagrams. In this way, I hoped that most people would be able to share in the excitement and feeling of achievement in the remarkable progress that has been made in physics in the past 25 years. Even if one avoids mathematics, some of the ideas are unfamiliar and difficult to explain. This posed a problem. Should I try to explain them and risk people being confused, or should I gloss over the difficulties? Some unfamiliar concepts, such as the fact that observers moving at different velocities measure different time intervals between the same pair of events, were not essential to the picture I wanted to draw. Therefore, I felt I could just mention them, but not go into them in depth. But some difficult ideas were basic to what I wanted to get across. There were two such concepts in particular that I felt I had to include. One was the so-called sum over histories. This is the idea that there is not just a single history for the universe. The other idea, which is necessary to make mathematical sense of the sum over histories, is imaginary time. With hindsight, I now feel that I should have put more effort into explaining these two very difficult concepts, particularly imaginary time, which seems to be the thing in the book with which people have the most trouble. However, it is not really necessary to understand exactly what imaginary time is, just that it is different from what we call real time. The book is in its 17th printing in the United States and its 10th in the United Kingdom. Why did so many people buy it? It's difficult for me to be sure that I'm objective, so I thought I would go by what other people said. I found most of the reviews, although favorable, rather unilluminating. They tended to follow the formula, Stephen Hawking has Lou Gehrig's disease, in US reviews, or motor neurone disease, in UK reviews. He is confined to a wheelchair, cannot speak, and can only move X number of fingers, where X seems to vary from 1 to 3, according to which inaccurate article the reviewer read about me. Yet he has written this book about the biggest question of all, where did we come from and where are we going to? The answer that Hawking proposes is that the universe is neither created nor destroyed. It just is. In order to formulate this idea, Hawking introduces the concept of imaginary time, which I, the reviewer, find a little hard to follow. Still, if Hawking is right, and we do find a complete unified theory, we shall really know the mind of God. In the proof stage, I nearly cut the last sentence in the book, which was that we would know the mind of God. Had I done so, the sale might have been halved. Rather more perceptive, I felt, was an article in The Independent a London newspaper that said that even a serious scientific book, like A Brief History of Time, could become a cult book. My wife was horrified, but I was rather flattered to have my book compared to Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance. I hope, like Zen, that it gives people the feeling that they need not be cut off from the great intellectual and philosophical questions. Undoubtedly, the human interest story of how I've managed to be a theoretical physicist, despite my disability, has helped. But those who bought the book from the human interest angle may have been disappointed, because it contains only a couple of references to my condition. The book was intended as a history of the universe, not of me. This has not prevented accusations that Bantam shamefully exploited my illness, and that I cooperated with this by allowing my picture to appear on the cover. In fact, under my contract, I had no control over the cover. I did, however, manage to persuade Bantam to use a better photograph on the UK edition than the miserable and out-of-date photo used on the US edition. It has also been suggested that people buy the book because they have read reviews of it or because it's on the bestseller list, but they don't read it. They just have it in the bookcase or on the coffee table, thereby getting the credit for having it without taking the effort of having to understand it. I'm sure this happens, but I don't know that it's any more so than for most other serious books, including the Bible and Shakespeare. On the other hand, I know that some people at least must have read it, because each day I get a pile of letters about my book, many asking questions or making detailed comments that indicate that they have read the book, even if they don't understand all of it. I also get stopped by strangers in the street who tell me how much they enjoyed it. But the frequency with which I receive such public congratulations, to the great embarrassment of my 9-year-old son, seems to indicate that at least a proportion of those who buy the book actually do read it.
He could be the most famous scientist in the world. He holds the Lucasian Chair of Maths at Cambridge, Newton's Chair. I found him even more shrunken and twisted than I expected. A hole in his throat has to be sucked free of fluid. Spit bubbles from his lopsided mouth, and his limbs are like sticks. But when you ask him about physics, Stephen Hawking takes you to the foremost frontiers of present knowledge, as you'll hear. His voice comes from an electronic box, and it takes an age to formulate answers. But then he lets you know he's about to speak.
I will tell you when I'm ready. What happens is that I will write my answer. I will tell you when I'm ready.
My first question is, I read the other day that Brief History of Time has sold several million. Do you know what the exact figure of sales is at all?
I don't know how many my book has sold, but I think it must be over 4 million worldwide. It's about 1 per 1,000 people in the world.
1 per 1,000 people in the world. That's incredible. I remember when you once wrote an article, I think it was where you answered some of the critics who said people buy the book but don't read it. I broadcast that on The Science Show. The interesting thing was I got one of Australia's best-known actors called John Bell to read the article, and I don't think there were too many people who understood the physics joke that was in the choice of that particular speaker. You, of course, appreciate the joke?
Yes.
He being a famous physicist. The other joke is that right in the beginning, you, of course, talk about the turtles, how the old lady thought that the universe consists of turtles right the way down. Do you think you might be responsible for the current craze about turtles?
I hope not.
But let me ask you something, just two more questions. Despite the brevity of the interview as it's broadcast, we've actually been recording this for over an hour and a quarter, I think it is, but you've obviously travelled a great deal. Do you think possibly, like your colleague Paul Davies, you could come to Australia for a brief visit?
I was planning to come to a conference in Australia 2 years ago, but then something came up. But I would like to come, if there was a scientific reason.
But the final question is that I gather you've become a film star in recent times. Is that the one by Steven Spielberg?
Spielberg is associated with it, yes.
Well, thank you, Professor Hawking, for appearing on The Science Show. I can't think of a better way for us to celebrate.
Thank you.
Professor Stephen Hawking in his study in Cambridge. Stephen Hawking, as you know, died this week, age 76. His spirit was astounding.